our friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Mike, how hard are you right now?
Oh, man, I've been hard since you said, hi, welcome to Friends with Fantasy Benefits podcast.
They're in win now mode every year. They also can acquire people at the drop of a hat.
We are Friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Yep, and nobody's got the exact same brand as Evan, but we'll do the best that we can.
That's true. He is always going to be here in spirit with us.
We are Friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Obviously, the Yankees are a younger lineup, and so that's where part of the swing comes from. Of course, they have the dichotomy of being younger and older at the same time.
We are Friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Welcome into our Friends with Fantasy Benefits baseball show. I am your host, Ben Brentz. I'm joined tonight by Chuck Anderson. How are you doing, Chuck?
I am doing quite well, thank you. There's no worries on this end. It is a the Brewers are bouncing back for me. There's a lot of interesting things happening in sports, getting ready for football. Got baseball still rolling. Down the stretch they come, as the horse announcers would say. And so here we go.
Well, that's good to hear. Unfortunately, we're not able to be joined tonight by our other co-host, Mr. Evan Peterson. He is having some technical difficulties, which is a bit of a shame. We were really looking to have him be able to come in, but we'll just have to try to bring some enthusiasm without him, don't you say, Chuck?
Yep, and nobody's got the exact same brand as Evan, but we'll do the best that we can.
That's true. He is always going to be here in spirit with us, and technically he can message us anytime he wants to get a point in, and I'll just have to throw it into the podcast, I suppose. But Chuck, why don't you tell our listeners where you can be reached on Twitter?
I can be reached at Just Chucking It on Twitter, and the only other thing that I work on besides these podcasts is I do the Of Note column for the FWFB website.
Great, and I can be found at B. Brennis, FWFB. Chuck, why don't we jump right in? Today we're going to be talking about some player debates for some players that you would think are not as close on the player radar over the last month or even on the season as where they actually are. And some of the picks are actually quite surprising. Why don't we start off with talking about Daniel Murphy or Jonathan Scope? Who would you say is better for the rest of the season, and who do you think gives a better value next season? What I'll be able to do is I'll go through the stats before or after, if you like, your choice.
Well, I've highlighted a few of the stats myself, so why don't I go over my stats, and then you can tell me which ones you saw that were most important to you. I was stunned to find out that Scope and Murphy are so close statistically. Actually, Scope, you know, has six more home runs. He's got six more RBIs. He's got three less runs scored. They have the same amount of steals. And so it is a very interesting comparison. And rarely am I the guy who likes to go with the veteran over the younger player. But the one thing I would say is I really like the fact that Murphy strikes out about half as much as Scope does and still walks more than Scope does. And I like the fact that, you know, he's shown no signs of slowing down and he's done it for a bit longer track record. So even though I wouldn't blame anybody for doing it the other way, I would still take the older but still rolling along Daniel Murphy on top of Jonathan Scope. But I'm very curious what you think.
I was a big Murphy fan because he was Met. And when he left, I was disappointed to see him go because I knew we lost a good baseball player. He turned into an even better baseball player once he changed his swing, and he had that amazing postseason a couple years back, and then he brought all those talents to Washington, and he's had such fantastic seasons since. But right now, Jonathan Scope on the year has 25 home runs. He looks like he can hit, 35 in a season, while Murphy probably is a 20 to 25 guy. right now, Scope is ahead in RBIs in a much less offensive powerhouse of a team. Now, the negative thing for Murphy is that he has to bat fifth because of how well Ryan Zimmerman has played on the season and because Dusty Baker very rarely likes to use back-to-back lefties in the lineup. So that's the one negative thing about Murphy is that he'll end up hitting fifth, even though he probably is a fantastic cleanup hitter for that team. But anyway, I think with how much improvement Scope has shown on this entire season, I think he may be a player that gives better value for next year, just because he probably goes at least 30 to 50 picks later in drafts than Murphy. Would you agree with that?
Oh, I definitely agree with that. If you're going to get him 3 rounds later or 2 to 3 rounds later, I agree with Scope. If it was just a matter of, you know, who you were to acquire or a straight line comparison at the same draft value, that's when I think it gets a little dicier.
Yeah, I agree. I think Murphy's the better pick if you have the same player at, let's say, an auction price, and they come out, and you have the same auction price, or you can only have one player in the draft at that same spot. I think Murphy's definitely the better pick, just for the fact that I think because of how much better the Washington lineup is, that if, let's say, Zimmerman has a bad season next year, Murphy could easily get pushed up to four if Dusty Baker decides that it's not worth it for him to have to hit behind Zimmerman if Zimmerman's only hitting, say, 250. So Murphy then could potentially see even greater RBI chances and may be able to even score more runs just because there may be other players behind him. We know that Murphy is going to be the better average person. They're basically in the same spot when it comes to steals, but the one spot, as I was saying, that will go in favor of Scope is the home runs. Now, I think that we're able to settle in for less home runs just because there is a player that is going to hit, you know, 330 or above in Murphy, and Scope potentially could hit 300, but would you be surprised if he hit 270 next season, Chuck?
I wouldn't be surprised if he hit 255. Like I said, that's the one thing that I like about Murphy is I like better the fact that he doesn't strike out nearly as much and he walks more. It shows a little bit better control of the strike zone. Not that I don't really like Scope, because I really, really like Scope and what he's done this year. The other thing I would like to mention about Murphy is that in recent years, Murphy has ended up with third base eligibility. He's ended up with first base eligibility. I think Scope is a guy who's pretty much locked into only having second base eligibility as well, which is varying degrees of importance depending on the league size, depending on if you do use daily transactions or not. But it could end up being a factor that you could end up using Murphy in multiple slots, and I think Scope is pretty locked in at second base.
I definitely think Scope is locked in the second because I don't see anywhere else that they would play him. But as of right now, Murphy has not played a game anywhere else on the diamond. He has only played second base. He's played 99 games there. Tonight is his 100th game. So it's not that you're likely to see him play anywhere else unless, say, Ryan Zimmerman potentially gets injured. I don't really see him moving over to third base at this point. I guess it's completely possible, but I think that they have enough depth from other pieces that they could consider someone at third. But I think that they would consider him the best first base player that they could use outside of Adam Wind. So, and I think they would still prefer him over Adam Wind, and they would rather move Defoe over to second when Trey Turner came back, if that was the case. So, as of right now, they're both going to probably be second base only. We know Murphy's going to have a better average. The RBIs are going to be similar. The runs could be similar, and the steals are definitely going to be basically in the same ballpark of 1-4 for the entire season. But it is something that's interesting considering where Jonathan Scope was coming into the season and where he is now.
True enough, my friend, true enough.
Chuck, why don't you give us one of the players that you wanted to talk about or one of the debates that you wanted to talk about?
Well, this fits into your profile wonderfully of a debate that at first when you hear it, you're not going to think that there's much of a debate at all. And that would be young Jose Barrios versus also young Jameson Taillon. At first glance or at first thought, it's pretty easy to think that Barrios would have a pretty large edge here. But the odd thing is that Taillon's FIP is 3.36 and Barrios is 3.99. Barrios actually has less Ks per nine than Taillon as well, although it is close. And Barrios has given up two or more runs in 11 of his last 13 starts. I know Taillon's year has been a little bit jilted because of the cancer scare, etc. But he has a 50% ground ball rate, which is better than Barrios, and he plays in the National League for a team with a really good defense versus Barrios playing in the American League with a team with some good defensive pieces, but I don't think their defense is nearly as strong as Pittsburgh's. So surprisingly enough, and Barrios just went well ahead of Taillon in the three-sport draft that I'm in right now, when I really delved into the statistics, I decided that I would prefer Taillon. Another interesting thing is that Taillon has a 364 BABIP against this year, and and Barrios is much closer to league average. So Taillon is getting especially unlucky this year. So I'm wondering if you have had the same thought process as me, that it wasn't going to be close, and then I'm wondering if you could go so far as to agree with me about Taillon.
I definitely wouldn't have thought it was as close, and I definitely wouldn't have thought it was as close. And unfortunately, I'm one of the type of owners that fails to see what all of the love in Taillon is at this current time, just because while I agree with you, he has had a very, very unlucky season, especially with the BABIP. And I do see that while he's getting unlucky, it's bringing up his whip, which will in turn bring up his ERA. I'm just not sure if he's the type of person I can get behind. I see Barrios as a top 25 guy going forward, and I just don't see that for Taillon. I see Taillon as a top 35 to top 40, but I feel like he still needs to be able to show me an entirely healthy season. I think he needs to be able to show me that he's able to put it together for an entire season. And I understand that Barrios had a terrible season last year, but he finished strong in AAA. He apparently was tipping his pitches. He came up and he started well this year. Obviously, he has faltered the more he goes through the league, but that's going to happen to a young pitcher. He's got to go through an offseason in which he's able to watch tape, and he's able to critique himself, and he's able to correct the minor changes that he would need to make. But while he's not as big of a K per nine guy because he's only a few strikeouts behind, I think that the Twins are an improving team more so than what the Pirates may be for the next few seasons. So the wins, if you play in a wins league, may not necessarily be there. But Barrios does have to go up against the DH, so there is a bit of a difficulty there. I would agree that it's definitely closer than I thought, but I think I would still have to go with Barrios.
Well, the other interesting thing of the two comparisons that we've done is that I think from what I've seen so far and what I gather is it's going to be sort of like the Scope versus Murphy thing was, in that I think Taillon is going to go well after Barrios, which makes it obviously even dicier, because maybe the value might end up being better for Taillon, even if straight up. I can certainly see it sort of turning into a coin flip that would most people would lean Barrios, because Barrios is slightly younger and has a little less time in the bigs.
Yeah.
So I guess I can see it either way.
I mean, let's not like try to hide the facts that both pitchers over the last month just haven't been good. I mean, right now over the last month, they basically had the same amount of innings, 24 and a third for Barrios and 23 and a third for Taillon. But Barrios has a 1.4 whip and Taillon has a 1.93 whip. These are guys that don't do a ton of give up a ton of walks, but Barrios in the last 24 and a third inning has given up 9. While the strikeouts are great, the problem is they've given up a ton of runs. They both have looked pretty bad over the last month. I really wouldn't want either of these guys for the remainder of this season necessarily until they maybe turn things around. But when they are both bad, they are both going to be in the same type of class, which is roughly around pitcher 40 to pitcher 50. But I think that Berríos, given his age and given his pitching repertoire, may be able to show that he is able to sustain top 25 rather than Tyone being able to sustain that.
Well, you're such a negative Nancy. Don't forget that Tyone went 6 1/3 scoreless the other day. And the last start for Berríos was bad. 5 earned runs in 5 innings, I believe, if memory serves me correct. So while I do agree with you, they've both been really – Tyone went through a 2-start stretch that was god-awful. His 2 starts before that. And that's jacking up the stats against him. But I do think it's been a longer prolonged stretch for Berríos where he's been sort of average and not nearly as good as he was in his first 3 or 4 starts. So that's another thing that's sort of been hedging in my mind. I think people have it in their head, those first 3 starts for Berríos, and I don't think they've realized that Tyone has basically, you know, been catching him. And Tyone does have like 30 less innings, I believe, in the 25 to 30 range of less innings because of the cancer scare, et cetera.
On the season, he only has 9 9 2/3 less innings. Just because Berríos wasn't brought up right away, and Tyone had started the year up, so there will be that.
Like I said, I like both of these talents a lot, and I guess this activity is just meant to point out that. If you miss out on Berríos a few rounds later, there might be some decent value in Tyone that you don't at first realize. I guess that's the most important thing. Wouldn't you agree?
I do. I definitely think that you may, if there's a big discrepancy in terms of where they're drafted, that you could get a great value in Tyone compared to what you get in Berríos. So it really just depends on where these players' values are next year. Would you say that Berríos is someone who is a potential top 120 player next year, or do you think that he's well ahead of that?
I think he's well ahead of that. I think he's going to go ahead of that. I think he's going to go right after the top 8 to 10 pitchers go off the board, and that could just be, you know, obviously only time will tell. So we're kind of trying to play soothsayer there when we say that, but you know, that's certainly in the 3-sport draft that we just did. That's certainly where he went in around the 15th. Pitcher off the board in the 3-sport league, so that's partially what's feeding that that prognosis for me. I think you get Tyone way after that. I think Tyone is well off the radar.
Yeah, Tyone seems like a player who there's enough of a falling behind that it could give him some helium, which is why I gave the 120 mark, because I think that Tyone is probably someone who'll go between 120 and 150. But if that's still 50-plus spots ahead or 50 spots behind Berríos, there's going to be a significant value difference there because Berríos would have to give top 100 value on the season, which could easily be very tough for him if he does, in fact, get drafted as high as you say. Why don't we move into next player debate? And I wanted to talk about Aaron Nola and Justin Verlander. Now, before we actually go into them, Aaron Nola has had such a fantastic season overall, and I don't think you would have necessarily assumed that he would have probably been having as good of a season just given how the Phillies have been all year. But if you look at where he is in the season compared to where he is over the last month, you'd be extremely surprised. So, Chuck, who do you think you would rather for the rest of this season, and where do you think these two players may go next season in drafts?
Well, Aaron Nola is only 24 years old, and he's up over a K per nine, almost 9.5 Ks per nine, and well under 3 walks per nine, which I really like. His FIP is right where his ERA is. It's right 3.12, 3.13, right in that zone. So I like Aaron Nola a significant amount more than Verlander. Verlander being 34 years old, some question of if he's going to get traded next year, where he might get traded to, if he's going to get traded in the offseason, etc. Nola already being in the National League and in the National League East, I really like. So there's a lot of things for me to like about Aaron Nola right now. A lot more than I like about Justin Verlander. Verlander's FIP is right around his ERA as well, but it's like a full run higher than Aaron Nola. So sign me up for Aaron Nola all the way here. Aaron Nola just went, you know, the equivalent of a round and a half after Jose Berríos in this draft. And when you look at them statistically, you can make a pretty good argument that Nola's having a better season.
Yeah. Over the last month and a half, basically, the worst start that Aaron Nola has had that I can see is against Arizona, in which he went six innings and gave up five earned runs. Since then, he has not given up more than two earned runs in any of his starts, and he's had two different starts in which he has given up zero earned runs. And during that time, the lowest strikeout amount that he's had is three. Outside of that is seven or eight or nine in every single game. He's getting a ton of strikeouts. He's not giving up a ton of walks, not giving up a ton of runs. Over the last month, he's got a 2.03 ERA and a 1.10 whip. And he's getting more than a strikeout per inning, just like you were saying. Now, Verlander has also had a great last month. He's got a 2.31 whip. 2.31 ERA and a 1.13 whip. The thing is that, like you were saying, Aaron Nola is a very young player, and he's been improving. And we saw this from him early last year, that he started off very strong, and he started faltering as the season went on, and injuries did play their toll. But I do think that Aaron Nola is definitely the better player value for next year, whether he does get drafted ahead of Verlander or not. I think he's still going to put up a better season. And if he's drafted behind, then you know that you're getting even better value. We have seen that Verlander has had much better second halves, and he has had somewhat poor first halves at times. But I think given his age, it's starting to take a bit of a hit on him. And we have seen that sometimes he has had difficulties being able to keep it up for stretches at times. Now, obviously, he's only had one bad start since the beginning of July, but that one start he gave up seven earned runs. But outside that, he's been relatively good overall. But it would be nice to be able to see Justin Verlander put together for a little bit longer, considering how high he gets drafted every single season. And it would be nice to see that Aaron Nola gets a little bit more love coming into the next draft, I think.
Yeah, I think they're both top 30 pitchers for next year for sure. I just think if people really take a long, hard look at the actual statistics for Aaron Nola, I think you're going to see him get significantly more helium than you're going to get out of Verlander. Even though I don't really see the Phillies being dramatically better next year than they are this year. I think they're overall, the team has a long way to go. But, you know, like I said, just being in the National League, to face the pitcher yet, et cetera, he's had two really dominating stretches, one very early in his career, you know, right after he got called up, and now this dominating stretch. So unless he really tails off badly, I really like Aaron Nola quite a deal more than I like Verlander for next year.
Yeah, and it's nice to see that Noah's able to put up such good numbers on a team that isn't great. And I think as the Phillies bring up other pieces over the next year and a half, that probably would be able to help improve that team offensively. I think that if Noah's able to continue putting in the same numbers now on a bad offensive team in a league that may potentially count wins, then you may be able to get an added benefit of being able to jump on that train now, especially if he keeps pitching the same way and he's able to get more wins. In a quality start league, I think that this is as good as he's going to be able to get. I don't know if there's another peak in him. I think that this is probably the peak. Would you agree in a quality start league?
Yeah, I don't think you're going to get you're going to get a whole lot more than this. I mean, better than this is up like than what he's been over the last month is, you're talking about like top five or six pitcher in all of baseball, good to be much better than he's been. So I think this is sort of the best you can hope for. And being young, I think you should more or less expect that you're going to have slight ups and downs at least throughout the year. So, but you know, the danger in Verlander, of course, is you've got velocity questions that we've had in recent years. He's had to adjust to being more of a pitcher. Now that he doesn't throw in the high 90s, he only throws in the mid 90s. I'm sure there's a lot of pitchers in baseball that feel really sorry for him that he's, you know, stuck throwing in the 94, 95 zone now. But the point being is that they're in a different performance arc era, you know, part of their career. I mean, you're sort of waiting for Verlander to hit the cliff, and he's not as good as he used to be. And it looks like Aaron Nola is taking steps towards improving, and he's already had some, you know, completely dominant stretches.
Yes, I do agree. If you had to give a final season line of what Aaron Nola may be able to do next year, do you think he's a sub 3.5 guy in his ERA, or do you think he is right around that? Where do you say he would be next year? Because we've obviously seen a run difference between his last month and his entire season. So where do you think he falls?
I would put him somewhere right around 3, somewhere between 3 and 3.15. I think seems to be pretty likely. He doesn't get himself in a lot of trouble. He's always had excellent control. You know, he's not giving up hardly any home runs this year. The ground ball rate is decent. I'm getting too high on him now. But I love what I see out of Aaron Nola right now. And I have him close to 3. And the beauty of him is that he's a guy that if everything fell right, there's no reason he couldn't be a 2.8 or a 2.9 ERA guy, in my opinion.
I agree. Chuck, why don't you bring us into the next player debate?
Okay, I wanted to talk about the two pop-up third basemen. That's what I call them, pop-up third basemen. And they have a ton of similarities, especially in how surprising their season has been. And that is one, Whit Merrifield, who's 28 years old, the Kansas City Royals second baseman. He's also got some outfield eligibility. And Chris Taylor, who is the latest reject from the Seattle Mariners system to go somewhere and start looking significantly better, although this is the prize of that group because he's been amazing. You know, it's 18 stolen bases for Merrifield and 15 for Chris Taylor. Taylor had no major league home runs in 82 games before this season, and now he's got 15 in 93 games. So it really is kind of an amazing breakout. I know he speaks of some swing changes that he made early in the season that really helped him. Now, there is a slight difference in the fact there's some differences that are pretty stark between these players as well. Taylor strikes out 27% of the time, which is a lot, even in this day and age. And Merrifield only strikes out 13% of the time. So that's a pretty big difference. And the other difference, of course, is that Chris Taylor is sporting the whopping 408 BABIP, which, of course, the 400-plus BABIP line is a line that people have never been able to repeat. And Merrifield only has a 309 BABIP. So there's a lot of things that you look at that are, you know, 13 home runs to 15 home runs. I mean, there's just a ton of things that look very similar in these players. If you wanted to boast a statistic for Taylor, how about the 550 slugging for Taylor versus the 488 for Merrifield? You know, the only other real difference that I see is that Merrifield stole a ton of bases in the minors, and Taylor really never stole that many bases before in his professional career. So this is a very interesting debate. I can tell you that Whit Merrifield went well ahead of Chris Taylor, who's still available in our three-sport draft. So I think people who are really into stats realize that that 408 BABIP screams regression. And then the question becomes how much regression. So I'm curious. I guess overall I agree that I would rather have Merrifield just because I also think there's going to be a relatively empty cupboard in Kansas City next year. And so I think Merrifield is a guy that's going to be left that's going to be asked to do more offensively, but he's going to stay in a premium spot in the lineup, even if he falters for a while. So I would take Merrifield, but it's a lot closer statistically than you might think. How about you, my friend?
Yeah, I definitely think that Merrifield has shown the propensity to be able to do a good job. I mean, last year in 311 at-bats, he hit .283, so I'm much more willing to trust his .294 average that he has. He had 8 steals in the 311 at-bats last year, and now he's at 18. So obviously, he's getting more comfortable on the base paths. The big difference is the power. You know, last year in 50 less at-bats, he had 2 home runs. He's now at 13, and that has helped improve the RBI numbers, so he's clearly hitting the ball better. Now, who knows if that's because he's also changed how he swings and what he's doing and if he feels more comfortable, but he definitely seems like the player I feel I can count on more. Obviously, the Dodgers are having an unprecedented season. They're having one of the best 50-game stretches in the MLB history. Basically, Chris Taylor is playing for a team that is playing out of their mind right now, so the runs and the RBIs are going to be coming. He's seeing the ball well. He's hitting the ball well, so the home runs, you know, as long as you can ride it out, that's great. I think I'd look to trade him in a keeper or dynasty league because I don't see him being able to replicate this value next year. I definitely think that because Kansas City will lose players next year, Whit Merrifield could be one to the players that has to stand out the most. Now, he'll most likely only be second base eligible next year at the pace that it's going currently, just because he's not going to have outfield eligibility unless he gets more games out there. And Chris Taylor is only going to have second and outfield eligibility next year, as he will most likely lose third base unless Justin Turner does get hurt again. So I think in terms of second baseman, I'd rather have Whit Merrifield. Where would you say if Chris Taylor does end up being a player next year of draft topic, where do you think he'd fit? Where do you think he would go in drafts?
Well, that's the three sport draft that we're doing right now is kind of an interesting experiment because we're down through players like Trey Mancini, etc. in this draft, and there's still no sight of Chris Taylor. So, and almost a ton of stolen base guys have gone in this draft. Guys like Manuel Margot, people obviously being drafted just for stolen bases, which the one thing I learned and the one thing that made this interesting, the one thing I've learned is that stolen bases are going to be at an unprecedented premium next year. And so the fact that Taylor is still there tells me that there's definitely some skepticism about his ability to repeat this or maybe even maintain a significant role in their lineup. Obviously the Dodgers are a team that doesn't have to be patient. They're in win now mode every year. They also can acquire people at the drop of a hat. You know, last offseason it looked like they were going to acquire Dozier to play second. So I think you're looking at some variables playing into it. But overall, I'm pretty amazed how quickly Merrifield, who you'd expect to be relatively hidden on the Royals, he's been gone for a long time now, and no one has taken a gamble on Chris Taylor being able to repeat any of these crazy shenanigans that it looks like he's pulling statistically right now.
Yeah, I think for me, I'm kind of in the same boat as what your league would be doing. I don't know if Chris Taylor, like I was saying, is someone that I really want to take the chance on. I'd rather someone else take the chance and succeed than me take the chance and fail. I do own him in a dynasty league, and I really would like to try to move him. I'm not really sure where to try to value him, and that's a very tough thing because, you know, he had been a somewhat failed prospect coming out of Seattle, and you didn't expect much of him, and now he's gone and done this, and is it just because he's not in Seattle anymore? Or is it just because the Dodgers as a whole are just having such a great season? I mean, Puig is their number 8 hitter. He's a 20 home run guy. You know, it's that type of team that they're all excelling all at the same time. So it's really tough to be able to value him, you know?
Yeah, I don't think there's any doubt about it. I mean, it's turned out to be like a fairy tale story almost in Dodgerland right now, which I'm sure their fans are really enjoying, although there will be some significant pressure on them to do well in the postseason. And if they don't do well, it'll seem like a lot of it was for naught, because it's hard to expect. I mean, we've seen some cracks in the armor in their starting pitching already with Alex Wood. You know, obviously, Kershaw's injury, you know, they brought in Darvish, but he'll have to get signed long-term if they want to be using him long-term. So there's definitely questions going forward. It's not exactly the same kind of situation that the Cubs were in last year, where the Cubs seemed to be really set with young players that they had to build around for quite a few years. I think in this situation, I mean, you do have Bellinger, which is really, you know, has really been exciting and done a lot for him, and Corey Seager. So that part is sort of similar, but you just don't see as much sort of depth in their lineup and stuff coming up from their minors to bolster them long term as the Cubs. So there'll be a significant amount of pressure this year for them to do well, which you know, they haven't shown any signs of not being able to do, and they do have a very nice rotation for the postseason. But what people are going to be expecting out of the Dodgers next year is going to be pretty interesting, because everyone, including their number eight hitter that you mentioned, almost everyone besides those two young players has some pretty bad stretches in their past. So you got to wonder how much they can keep it up. And Chris Taylor, you know, is definitely going to be beloved by the Dodgers for the coming years if they can seal the deal this year. And so maybe that gives them a little extra leeway. But Whit Merrifield seems to be more of the real deal with the normal BABIP than what you get out of a guy like Chris Taylor, who's minor league numbers really don't point to any of the success that he's had statistically this year.
Exactly. Why don't we move into the last player debate that we have, and that's going to be talking about Luis Severino and James Paxton. Severino has had a season that people weren't necessarily expecting after he kind of faltered last year, and now it's putting it nicely. There was a lot of owners that believed in him and the strikeout rate that he's able to have, and he's performed extremely well this year. And with James Paxton, people had seen the improvements that he had made last year, but injuries have been the thing that always hold him back. Now, this year, they both had fantastic numbers on the entire year. They both have sub-1.1 whips. They both have sub-3 ERAs. They're both very big K guys, and even over the last month, they've both been absolutely fantastic. Both of them have a sub-1.5 ERA, and both have sub-1 whip with a ton of strikeouts. Who would you pick for the rest of the season, Chuck?
Well, I think I'm at the point of taking Severino, and it does mainly come down to an injury situation for me. You know, Paxton has yet to put in a full season. I think there's some statistics that would surprise people. Paxton's FIP is 2.31 and Severino's is 2.91. Also, you know, Paxton's home run to fly ball rate is ridiculous. 5.6% is incredibly low, while Severino's is 11.9%. Well, some of that can be attributed to Yankee Stadium versus Safeco Field, for sure. So there's some interesting, you know, sort of binaries going on here between the two pitchers. They're both young. They both are dominant right now. They're both going to go certainly as top 15 pitchers next year. I think, you know, the most recent draft that I was in, that I've been talking about during this pod, Severino went well before Paxton. So I do think that Severino gets sort of an East Coast bias, if you will. And also, I mean, some of it is warranted because Severino has been healthier. So, you know, and I think Severino is going to get more run support as a generality, but he's also going to have a hard time containing people from scoring against him in tiny little, especially in right field, tiny little Yankee Stadium. So there's some positives and minuses for both. I think Severino's health wins him out in this debate with most people.
Yeah, I think I have to go Severino for health, but I do think that if you could if you told me that both were going to be able to make 30 starts next year, I think that I may have to go Paxton because of that. I think that the skill set that he brings to the table is just slightly better, and I think that given all of the pitching parameters and the division and the ballpark that he pitches in, I think that it gives him the better opportunity to succeed if you could guarantee that they both were going to get the same amount of starts. Now, Severino this year has had absolutely fantastic hay numbers, as has Paxton, but I do think that Severino does have a little bit more strikeout stuff in his arsenal than Paxton does. But at the same point in time, I think that Paxton does have the ability to get more wins, because I do think that Seattle is a team that will perform at his level as opposed to the Yankees, which, as we've seen this year even, they have been very up and down. Now, this year, the Yankees weren't expected to be a fantastic team, but at the same point in time, they've exceeded what expectations there were of them, but you have still seen that the offense has been up and down. And I'm not sure if that's really going to change. I don't really see Seattle's offense as being totally up and down. I think that the players there are a bit more consistent. Do you disagree with that?
I guess I don't disagree with it, by and large. Obviously, the Yankees are a younger lineup, and so that's where part of the swing comes from. Of course, they have the dichotomy of being younger and older at the same time, because the old regime sort of, you know, extended older players, you know, like Ellsbury, etc. And so those guys are still on the team. And then, but then they've infused the middle of their lineup with younger players. And so that's where some of the inconsistency comes from, as far as I'm concerned. But it's such an odd balance here, because, you know, it's just depends on how much risk you want to put on health. And I think some of that comes down to your league parameters for, you know, the different settings that you may have. If there's going to be decent pitchers on the waiver wire and you're going to get Severino plus a decent replacement if you're going to get Paxton plus a decent replacement instead of having Severino for what likely turns out to be more innings, then all of a sudden it becomes a lot closer. I want to bring up one more thing about this debate. I think it actually would kind of hurt Severino for next year if the Yankees made a deep playoff run, meaning that I think there could be a little extra wear and tear in a young player having to make a deep playoff run, which, of course, you know, at present pace, it looks like the Red Sox are probably going to win that division. So maybe it's only a one-game wild card thing, so it won't matter. But I would say if Severino has to make an extra three or four starts in the postseason, I think you're going to see that that's going to add to his wear and tear, and that might make it a little closer yet. But I think you're going to see most people lean towards Severino here. I really do.
Yeah, I agree with the playoff run, because the Yankees would use Severino as their number two most likely. They may even use him as their number one, so a deep playoff run will put more innings. And we have seen what has happened to pitchers in the past when they have gone on deep playoff runs and they're not necessarily used to the innings limit. I mean, last year he only had 71 innings. This year he's already at 139. I expect him to be at plus 100 innings before this season's out, or at least by the time the season's out. So it just depends on what he gets from the extra playoff playoff games, if he does in fact get to the postseason. Chuck, is there anything else on any of the players that we discussed tonight that you want to talk about?
No, but I do commend you, and to a lesser extent myself, that these were some really interesting player debates. And these are definitely the kind of balancing thing that goes on when you're making drafts for next year, which is I'm presently doing right now. So it was definitely a worthwhile exercise. I think we gave a lot of information out there, so I like it. Well done.
Yes, I agree. Why don't you tell our listeners where you can be reached and what you're working on?
All right. I'm Chuck Anderson. I can be reached at Just Chucking It on the Twitter machine, as something that Evan would say. And I'm doing the Of Note column for the FWFB website every week. which has been interesting. It's a very easy read because it's only like a page to a page and a half, and usually has two or three subjects to it. So it's kind of a USA Today style, if you will. But just trying to point out some of the quirks and some of the things I see going on that maybe aren't getting covered everywhere else. So look for that on the website. And thank you so much for the download and the listen. We appreciate it.
And I can be reached at bbrancefwfb on Twitter. I'm currently hosting the Friends of Fantasy Benefits basketball podcast. We have been doing some shows during the summer. I'm joined by Eric Mackey there. So if you're interested in basketball, please give that a listen. As the football season comes into play, I will be doing football podcasts along with our very own Evan Peterson and Eric Mackey as well. Occasionally, Donnie Miller will also be joining us. So give that a listen as we're getting ready to get into the heart of training camp, and preseason's about to start. So, you know, it's an exciting time for football fans. And obviously, you can still reach both Chuck, myself, and Evan Peterson on the Tuesday Baseball Show. We want to give a shout-out to Evan, who unfortunately couldn't be here because of technical difficulties, but, you know, he's always here in spirit. And for all of our listeners, you know, thank you for the downloads. Just like Chuck was saying, please feel free to give us a rating review. And enjoy the rest of the baseball season, everyone.